Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care. Our thanks as well to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Very pleased to have with us today, it took a while, but she's here, the State Superintendent of Education, Ms. Ellen Weaver. And we want to thank our buddy, our collective buddy, Matt Hires, for getting you up here. I understand you all go back a long, long, long way?
Yes, probably longer than I care to admit. But all the way back to our college days, we were actually in South Carolina student legislature together. So when he was at the Citadel and I was at Bob Jones, we were picking up all kinds of schemes. I actually ended up being lieutenant governor my senior year. We had a great time, and it was a great approximation of how government actually works. It was a really, really eye-opening experience in the best possible way.
You didn't get him in any trouble, so he had to do tours and push-ups.
I think it probably would have been the reverse if anything were to happen. I'm not saying he's a troublemaker, but you know him. So.
So tell our audience a little bit about Ellen Weaver.
Yeah, well, I'm the oldest of three children. My mother's family is from the Midwest. They were farmers from Iowa. My heritage on mom's side goes all the way back to the Revolutionary War. So her relatives came over on the Mayflower, fought in the Revolution, migrated through Ohio, and ended up settling in Iowa back in the 1800s. So her stock runs deep there. My dad's family has been all over the place, but most recently had settled in South Carolina. And so I was actually born in Greenville, but I grew up in Iowa. We moved up there when I was about three, moved back to South Carolina when I was when I was 18, and I have been in South Carolina or working in D.C. for a South Carolinian ever since. So I consider this home. I'm definitely homeborn and homegrown, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful place to be.
So you say you worked in D.C. What did you do down there?
Yeah, well, right.
You survived. Well,
I did survive. I said after 7 years, they let me out for good behavior. So I was a political science major at Bob Jones, and I went to work right after college for then Congressman Jim DeMint. Oh, yeah. He was my home congressman there in Greenville. So I went up to D.C., worked for him there. When he ran for Senate in 2003, 2004, I moved back to South Carolina, worked on his Senate campaign for 2 years. And then when he was elected to the Senate, went back to D.C. and was up there for 5 years. So 7 years all told. I was really privileged to kind of grow up in his office. I mean, I went all the way from intern my senior year of college to when he retired from the Senate, I was his state director. And that's what brought me back to South Carolina. I moved to Columbia. That's how a good Greenville girl ended up in Columbia. I was his state director, and it was centrally located, so I could get to Greenville and Charleston quickly. So I said, it makes sense to live here, and here I am. So
the education piece, the fact that you wanted to be the state superintendent, that came from where?
Well, I've had a long time passion for education. My great-grandmother, who was in Iowa, actually was a school teacher, and she was so formative and instrumental in my own upbringing. And I know that the love of reading, which is something that my mom imparted to me when I was young, has been directly attributable to any success that I have had in my life. It's because I had a great education and I loved reading. And so my passion to ensure that every single student in South Carolina has that same opportunity that I had is really what drives me. When Senator DeMint retired from the Senate, he helped me start an organization called Palmetto Promise Institute. And through my work at Palmetto Promise, which was a state-level public policy think tank, I just got deeper and deeper and deeper into education policy, specifically here in South Carolina, and actually ended up being appointed to serve on the Education Oversight Committee, which oversees our state accountability system. I became the first female chair of that board in 2019, I believe. And again, just continue to learn more and more and more about what our challenges are here in South Carolina, but I prefer to see our challenges as opportunities. And that's really what compelled me to run for state superintendent, is that I felt like in the decade that I had been working with and observing education policy in the state of South Carolina, we know what the challenges are. And we would have the same conversations over and over and over again, and yet very little ever changed. And so I see myself as a change agent. And really, change is built on good communication and good relationships. And looking back on it now, I can see that the 10 years working in public policy were so formative in terms of building trusted relationships with our governor, with the members of the General Assembly. And those are really the leaders in Columbia that you have to be able to work with if you're going to affect change.
So now you got the job. Is it more than you thought it would be?
Wow. It is a lot every single day. But I have to tell you, Manning, it is truly the most joyful thing that I have ever done, because even on the days that are difficult, where maybe there's a tough decision coming down the pike, and I know it will probably shock you to know that, there are those who roundly criticize me. I could say the sky is blue, and I would be criticized for that, right,
sure.
In some quarters. But that's just how public office works, and I welcome that critique. But even on those days, it is just such an incredible gift to know that I am working together with our lawmakers, our governor, with our superintendents, and with our teachers to build the future. That is what education is all about, is building the future. I love this state. I love the people in it. We have such a special opportunity here to put our students on the path where every single one of them reaches their full God-given potential. And that's what I get to wake up and do every single day. So even on the hard days, it's a joy.
Well, you come into this with a very interesting set of dynamics to work with. We're a poor state by all standards.
Yes.
And that, of course, creates challenges in itself. You take a look at the number of students across the state that are in free and reduced lunch programs.
Yes.
That's tough. And these kids, they don't have the support system at home. They don't get the regular meals that they need.
Right.
And yet they come into class. And because of the state system the way it is, they are expected to perform at a certain level, which means that responsibility for what they didn't receive at home falls on the teachers in the schools. And that is that's a tall order.
You are so right. And I say all the time, we have been so unfair to our teachers. We've asked them to be everything to everyone. A teacher can't replace a family. A teacher can't replace the larger community. And we've seen a lot of community breakdown happen around us too, not just family breakdown. And so I was actually just speaking today to the York County regional chamber. And the challenge that I always share with our civic community, our faith community, our nonprofit community, and our business leaders whenever I have a chance to talk to them is that these are our schools, which means they're our responsibility. We have got to step up and support our schools. And that's not just writing a tax check. It's our time that is so necessary.
Yeah. Well, and while all this is going on, the state has been so successful in attracting the biggest names in industry.
Yes.
The Boeings and the Volvos and the BMWs, and the list goes on and on and on. And these industries have an expectation that there's going to be a workforce there that'll run their computers to do the work that needs to be done. And if we can't produce the kind of product coming out of the high schools and colleges that they have an expectation for, who knows what that means to them long term?
That's exactly right. And I will tell you, so my dad is a builder. I like to think in analogies. If you don't have a strong foundation, the building is going to crumble.
Right.
And so that's really why my primary focus during my first 2 years of service as state superintendent has been all around building a strong foundation in early literacy, because we know that reading is the skill that a student has to have to be successful in life. It's no surprise that anywhere from 60 to 85% of our incarcerated population is functionally illiterate.
Mm.
And so if our kids don't have those reading skills, they're not going to be successful in life. And so I'm so encouraged by the incredible work that we've seen happening, not just here in South Carolina, but really following the example of a state like Mississippi. You know, we used to say, thank goodness for Mississippi. Well, we can't say that anymore, because they are actually outpacing the nation when it comes to closing gaps in academic achievement for low-income students. And I want to come back to what you were talking about students in poverty, because you are absolutely right. The challenges that poverty creates are enormous. But I love to tell people, poverty is a challenge, but it is not an excuse. These children are every bit as competent, as capable, and as bright as any students anywhere. And if we provide the supports as adults that we know that they need, they can succeed. And I am seeing it happen in high poverty schools all over this state. One school that I was able to just visit a few months ago was down in Greenwood 50, a very rural area, 87% poverty, primarily a majority minority student population. They are beating the state average. They are the second highest performing elementary school in the entire state of South Carolina. They lost out number one by 2 points to one of the wealthiest schools in Greenville County, Augusta Circle. And so I attribute that success to leadership that is focused on the fundamentals, and that a great principal supporting their teacher in the classroom and giving their teacher the tools that they need to actually teach. Now, that doesn't mean that there still aren't real physical needs that these kids have. And so I was just up in Spartanburg County a few months ago, was able to visit this incredible public-private partnership called the Middle Tiger Community Center, which is a collaboration of the business community, the school district, and the faith community. And they have all kinds of wraparound services that they are providing, where that doesn't fall on the school, but they're providing that student and family support to support the work that the school is doing. And I'd love to see Middle Tiger Community Centers grow up all over South Carolina.
You know, we just came from this Chamber Educational Forum, and we're interested. If you take a look at the four school districts in York County, they are as different as night is from day. Kelly Cox, the superintendent over at the York School District, she pointed out the fact that they've got a 70% free and reduced poverty rate in their district. Yet they're graduating 94% of the kids.
Yes.
So they're not using that as an excuse. They figured out a way to adapt.
Yes.
To what the need of that student is.
That's right.
And achieve the desired result.
That's right. You all have amazing things happening here in York County across all four of those districts. And a lot of it has to do with that no excuses mentality of your superintendents, that, you know, we acknowledge we have challenges and we have to innovate to overcome those challenges, but we can get the job done, and they are.
You know, it still goes back to the erosion of the family unit as I knew it when I was growing up as a young lad. It is not the same today as it was for lots of reasons, not pointing fingers at anybody. But if you don't have that traditional family unit there pushing and disciplining, because that's one of the big issues in a lot of these schools, is discipline.
It sure is.
And we don't live in an era where we can take the kid out and paddle him because he was misbehaving. It doesn't work. But we have to figure out a way to instill the discipline factor in that child, because they're not getting it home.
One of the things that I'm really excited about, one of our strategic priorities as an agency, is what we call Project Raise Your Hand. And that is a collaboration of business, nonprofit, and faith leaders in the greater Midlands area coming together to get mentors into our schools. Because I think oftentimes what these students lack is a strong example in their life, someone who is speaking truth into their life and someone who is saying, hey, you know what? We believe in you. You have that potential, but you have to make good choices in order to realize that potential, right? And showing them an example of what making good choices looks like. And so we need mentors more than we have ever needed them. I just think that acknowledging those challenges, that discipline issue especially, my goodness, when I talk to teachers, so, you know, we have been fighting to raise teacher pay here in South Carolina. We have raised teacher pay 47% in the last 6 years. That's huge. We have a long way to go, but we're making progress. But when I talk to teachers, Manning, they very rarely talk about the salary. Yes, they would love to have more money, right. but they just say, I want to feel safe in my classroom, and I am afraid of these kids. I'm afraid of being struck, the lack of discipline, right? And so, you know, I don't like all of the politics that gets into education, but I think we have to acknowledge that there have been challenges on that discipline front that are a direct result of bad policies that have come down out of D.C. over the last 20 years. And so that's one of the reasons why I am really, really encouraged by this movement to push more decision-making autonomy back down to states when it comes to education, because we know the needs of our classroom. We know what's happening on the front lines. And I think nobody is better equipped than our local educators to ensure that we're getting those students what they need. I'm going on here, but one more thing, if I could say on the discipline front, I am so proud of the work that we're doing for the phone-free school day. I can't tell you the number of teachers and superintendents who have told me these kids think they're living in a reality TV show and they're staging fights and just all the bullying and the awfulness that happens on those phones during the school day. We're now nipping that in the bud and getting classroom time back to what it was always intended to be, which is instructional time, and lunch and extracurricular time back to what it was intended to be, which is developing relationships and friendships.
And with that said, we're going to have to take our mid-program break and remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2. Well, not quite live. This is a pre-recorded interview with our state superintendent, Ellen Weaver. Our program made possible by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax here with Founders. Our thanks as well to Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care, and to Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Good Pharmacy is with us as well, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI
and CN2.
What's hot at Substation 2? The new hot beef brisket sandwich. Brisket is smoked tender beef, sliced to order, served hot and delicious, and gardened your way. This is a limited time offer, so titillate your taste buds today with a hot beef brisket sandwich at Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
If a big outdoor project is part of your future plans, before you start digging, call 811. Within 72 hours, your underground utilities will be located and marked, and you'll know exactly where it's safe to dig. A quick phone call is all it takes, and there's no charge to find out where potentially dangerous underground cables and lines are located. Before you grab a shovel or start digging in the yard, call 811 at least 3 business days before digging. Remember, if it requires a shovel, it requires a call to 811.
We hope you'll choose The Nest to deliver your newest bundle of joy. The Nest is a new labor and delivery recovery postpartum unit at Piedmont Medical Center Fort Mill, working to make your pregnancy and childbirth experience as easy and enjoyable as possible. Our physicians and nursing staff at Piedmont are dedicated to giving expectant mothers the maternity care they want and need. Learn more at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care, because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
Love our subs? Want to find the fastest way to get here? Just say, hey Siri, take me to Substation 2 in Rock Hill.
Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill, and it gets 4 stars on Yelp.
Even faster, order online at mysubstationii.com. Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk on WRHI is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are, a very special edition of our Straight Talk program. Ellen Weaver, the State Superintendent of Education, is in Rock Hill today, and we've got her in the studios here.
Glad to be here, Manny.
Well, we're tickled to have you here. So, we're talking about, you referenced this in the first part of the program, you don't have any problems with the efforts of the current administration in Washington, D.C., to basically get rid of the Department of Education as we know it, and funnel that responsibility down to the states.
I think that there are a number of states like South Carolina and state chiefs like me all over the country that are ready to say, put us in, coach. We have been waiting for this opportunity for a long time. So as it turns out, less than 10% of our total K-12 funding in South Carolina comes from the federal government. And yet, I would say the vast majority of the cost of compliance and regulations come from that 10%. And so what we're saying is we're not looking to eliminate federal protections for students. I want to be really clear with your listeners, because I think there's a lot of whenever there is change, it creates uncertainty, and uncertainty can create fear. And so I want to take a step back and say, protections for special needs students, protections for low-income students, such as the title funding, that is all part of federal law. And even if the Department of Education were to go away tomorrow, that would still be part of federal law. And that is still going to be available for our students here in South Carolina. But what I'm so hopeful for is that this administration is going to, if not fully eliminate, right-size and downsize the federal Department of Education, cut that red tape, get some of that bureaucracy off of our backs so that we can better prioritize and allocate those funds to serve our low income and our students with special needs. We know we can do a better job than the very diffuse, siloed funding streams that are coming from Washington now.
Charter schools. You hear an awful lot about this, particularly from the public schools, because you're taking dollars away from them that are going to the charter schools. Yet, it's giving an alternative to parents who are trying to get an education for their child in districts where it just is not happening. How do you answer those complaints?
Well, so I will say on the charter school funding piece, so the schools are not receiving the funding that they would have received if the student was enrolled there. However, charter schools are funded out of a totally separate line item in the state budget. So they're not technically taking money away from those schools. It's a decision of the parent, and the money is being allocated based on where that student is going to get the education that best serves their needs. And so I have always been a firm believer that competition is the magic ingredient that creates an environment where a rising tide lifts all ships. Mm-hmm. And I am very passionate about ensuring that we have the best supported, highest quality traditional public schools in the country, because I truly believe that traditional public schools are going to always be the equalizing backbone of our education system. But I also think that those strong public schools can live in harmony with other education options like charter schools, even magnet schools within the traditional districts, open enrollment between public schools and even between public school districts, private school, homeschooling, virtual education. There are so many opportunities and options out there for parents now to truly customize an education that meets their students' needs. And so I think the question that we as policymakers and education leaders have to wrestle with is, how do we ensure a platform of equal access to all opportunity for every student, regardless of what community they're in, regardless of their income level? Because I believe every student deserves the same shot at success.
All right, we talked about teachers and teacher salaries. I bring this up all the time on Straight Talk. Here in South Carolina, we've brought the best industries in the world. They have an expectation to have the best workforce in the world. When we get surpluses in the state budget, which I know you don't control, why is it that South Carolina wants to beat their chest that, oh boy, we're up to 47,000 or we're going to be up to 50,000 when the private sector is paying $70,000, $80,000, $90,000? It seems to me that we've had opportunities in the past to break that mold and go to something that's a standard of $60,000 or $70,000. It's a lot of money, I know that. But if we want that, if that expectation is there, then we've got to figure out a way to fund it.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think that one of the things that I'm very happy about is that South Carolina, through the efforts of the General Assembly, my predecessor, and now me, in terms of bringing South Carolina's pay into parity with other southeastern states. So I am very glad to say now that we are on par, our average. And so that 50,000 or 47,000, that's the minimum starting salary, right? Our average teacher is actually making a good bit more than that, along with very good state benefits, right? And we very rarely talk about the cost of state benefits, which is pretty high.
Pretty high.
And they're very robust and good benefits, right? And so I think that we are really making huge progress towards offering a much more competitive pay package for teachers. But one of the things that I think we need to think about that we actually see working here in communities in South Carolina and across the country as well is the idea of strategic compensation, because it's not just about across the board increases for all teachers, as worthy as that is. We need to attract our best and brightest teachers into the most difficult areas.
There you go.
Whether that is a rural classroom that can't find teachers, or whether it is a high poverty area where these students are facing so many of the struggles that we've talked about, we've got to get our best and brightest. And that requires strategic compensation.
Right. And that's a whole other issue.
Yes,
housing
it is.
And
yes.
Community. I got that.
Yes.
One other quick question, because we're running out of time. There's been talk about when the politics gets running, that the superintendent of education should be a cabinet level position, that it shouldn't be an elected position. Thoughts on that?
Well, you know, that was actually something that I supported when it was on the ballot. Gosh, what was that, 6 years ago now? Mm-hmm. It was put before the people of South Carolina, and they defeated it pretty decisively in a 60-40 vote. So I serve at the will and the pleasure of the South Carolina voters. If they want to make that a cabinet-appointed position, that is certainly something I would support. But they spoke pretty loudly 6 years ago and said that was something they weren't interested in. So here I am.
Last comment. What do you want to say to the viewers and the listeners here in the York County region about the state of South Carolina? Got about a minute.
I want them to know that we have never had more opportunity to show the rest of the country what public education was always intended to be. And that is focusing on the fundamentals, early literacy and math. That is ensuring that we have high quality, aligned workforce pathways and learning opportunities for our students in high school. And that's making sure that every single student that leaves our high schools in South Carolina is equipped for college, career, or the military. We won't stop until we achieve that goal, and we're well on our way.
Ellen Weaver, thank you so much for spending a half hour with us here on our Straight Talk program today. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much, Manning.
Next time you're in Rock Hill, we want you to come back.
I'll do it.
Thank you. And that'll wrap up our Straight Talk program. From Substation 2, Cherry Road Across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relax You with Founders, and by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Of course, we always say at Substation 2, we love sandwiches and fresh salads. Slice, 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 garden, garden, garden. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Bye.
What's hot at Substation 2? The new hot beef brisket sandwich. Brisket is smoked tender beef sliced to order, served hot and delicious, and gardened your way. This is a limited time offer, so titillate your taste buds today with a hot beef brisket sandwich at Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
If a big outdoor project is part of your future plans, before you start digging, call 811. Within 72 hours, your underground utilities will be located and marked, and you'll know exactly where it's safe to dig. A quick phone call is all it takes, and there's no charge to find out where potentially dangerous underground cables and lines are located. Before you grab a shovel or start digging in the yard, call 811 at least 3 business days before digging. Remember, if it requires a shovel, it requires a call to 811.
If you have tried traditional weight loss methods of diet, exercise, and medications and failed to see lasting results, you may be a candidate for bariatric surgery at Piedmont Medical Center Fort Mill. Our 3 board-certified surgeons have performed more than 1,000 minimally invasive robotic surgical weight loss procedures, which can be very effective in long-term management of weight. Piedmont Medical Center Fort Mill, offering comprehensive weight management and weight loss services supporting patients on their journey to wellness. Learn more online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care, because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
Love our subs? Want to find the fastest way to get here? Just say, "Hey Siri, take me to Substation 2 in Rock Hill."
Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill. And it gets 4 stars on Yelp.
Even faster, order online at mysubstationii.com. Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
It's prom pledge time.
Jack here with Grayman's Plumbing. Students, leave alcohol and drugs out of your prom celebration and don't get in a car with a driver who has been drinking.
When you sign the pledge, you make a commitment to healthy living.
I'm Melody Reed with the Hazel Pittman Center. DUI means driving under the influence. It also means don't use it. Don't drink alcohol and drive. Parents, do your part to help students celebrate smart this prom season.
Other businesses that support Prom Pledge include
Champion Services, BioWin of Charlotte, 321 Signs and Graphics, City of York, and Shell Rapid Lube.
Hi, this is Clint Boyd of Saltwater Markets. Parents, talk with your students about alcohol and drugs and help them celebrate smart this prom and graduation season.
Join the stations of OTS Media, our local business partners, and your fellow students, and say no to alcohol and drugs. Log on to PromPledgeSC.com and find out all about the Prom Pledge activities at your school.